Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Phase Zero's Road to Deadpool 3 continues. This is the X3 X-Men The Last Stand review episode. Actually, I should have called it Phase Zero's Road to Deadpool and Wolverine. How dare I call it Deadpool 3? I'm BD, joined today by Jenna Anderson.
Hey, everybody.
We got Jamie Jurak.
Good morning.
And we got Aaron Perrine.
What's going on, peeps?
We're about to do X3 X-Men The Last Stand review discussion. We're keeping the phase structure that Aaron suggested for last Wednesday's show. So phase one of our X3 review and breakdown and all that will be Jamie's recap and our reactions. Phase two will be a deep dive into the movie, some facts about it. Some trivia facts. If you ever do X3 trivia, you'll be ready to go. And then phase three will be our out of 10 score and the average, the official phase zero number score, which we don't tell each other before the show. We hear it in real time. So next week, the road to Deadpool and Wolverine continues with X-Men Origins Wolverine. So if you don't have a physical copy, go get one. If you do, watch it again. And if you really just don't want to watch it, buy it. You can rent it, find it on. I think it's on Disney Plus. I'm not sure yet if it is on Disney Plus, but just give it a watch and join us. And if you don't, Jamie's got you covered as she does now with X3 X-Men The Last Stand. Jamie, can you recap us in glorious fashion?
Yeah,
I'm
going to try. Last week, I think 10 minutes was a little too crazy. So my goal for this one is 5. So Aaron, start my clock. Let's do it. All right. So we start with a flashback. We've got Xavier and Magneto. They're going to a house. Where are they going? It's Baby Jean Grey. They're taking her to the school. Magneto's like, I like this one because she's a little sassy girl. Cut to also a flashback. We've got poor little baby Warren in the bathroom. He's crying. He's trying to cut off his wings. His dad, he's an important guy, and he's like, not you too. No, there's a mutant in my house. Credits. Here we are in present day. Oh, what's this? Storm and Wolverine are battling alongside who? Rogue Bobby? And what's that? Kitty Pryde? Elliot Page in the house. They're all fighting. What's going down? But turns out they're training to be X-Men. They're in the simulator. But the problem is that Logan, he just does not know how to be a team player. And he just took charge and it didn't go very well. But what can you do? Things at the mansion are kind of awry. In fact, Professor X is like, Storm, one day I'm going to need you to take over. And she's like, what about Scott? Well, Scott's going crazy. Scott's having trouble. His girlfriend died in the last movie, in case you forgot, and he's got a little scraggly beard. He can't be bothered to shave his face. He is struggling. So he's out, and he's like, I gotta go to Alkaline Lake and stare at the water where my girlfriend died. And he does that, and he goes to the lake, and he's staring out, and a voice is in his head, Scott, Scott, Scott. Oh, it's Jean. Jean, you alive? Yes, Scott, I'm here. And they kiss. His face gets sucked alive. Oh, no, she's not really Jean. She's the Phoenix, and she seems to be dark. Scott's dead already? What a bummer. And then, but something happens in Charles's brain back at the mansion. He's like, something's going on. Quick, quick, go to Alkaline Lake. Something's happening there. Oh, they go to Alkaline Lake. It's Jean. She's alive. They make the same mistake Scott did. They bring her back to the mansion. She's passed out. Is she going to be okay? I don't know. She wakes up and she starts macking on Wolverine. That is evidence number one that something's not right. And they're kissing and it's really steamy. He's like, wait, Jean, this isn't you. And here's what happens. It turns out that the Phoenix has been dormant in her brain because Professor X did some mojo on her brain and was like, put that multiple personality. That's right. It's a second personality. We're going to put it down. And Wolverine's like, that's not right. You're messing with her brain. Have you messing with my brain too? And so he's like, I'm going to get Jean out of here. Mistake! Because Charles, he was pushing that second personality down for a reason. Jean, she's wreaking havoc. All of a sudden, she goes back to her childhood home for some reason. Then Magneto shows up and he's like, let's do it. Magneto collected a bunch of bad mutants. He's got Juggernaut. He's got other folks. He's like, let's do it. But they're at Jean's house. And she's like, this is me now. Like the song from that Hugh Jackman movie. And then And then she kills Charles. That's basically what happens. She goes crazy and she kills Charles, and Storm is crying and Wolverine is crying, and Magneto's like, maybe I did something bad, but also I don't care. And later on in the movie, he does say, my only regret is that Charles had to die for our dream to live. Charles is dead. Now they're at a funeral. What's going to happen? And they're going to close the school. But Storm says, no, we're going to keep it open. Meanwhile, what's this? A cure for mutation? You can't cure who we are. We're Cesar. We're people. This is wrong. So back to, remember baby Warren with the wings? His father, he's all like up in charge of this business. And guess who works in for the government? Oh, it's Beast. It's my boy. It's Kelsey Grammer. It's perhaps the second best X-Men casting in the history of casting. He's over there. But then they're like, he's like, a cure? This is a slippery slope, bro. Because here's what happened. They found a mutant who gets rid of mutant powers. And they used his blood to create this cure. But they're turning it into a weapon. And when Magneto was stealing mutants, they purposely shot our girl Mystique. She loses her powers, and Magneto has no sympathy. Says, girl, you are beautiful, but right now I'm done with you. And so all this is going on. It's a war now. It's a war. Mutant versus non-mutants. And Rogue is over here like, but I want a cure. I want to mac on my boyfriend, because you know what? He's looking over there at Kitty Pryde, and I don't like it. They're ice skating when we should be doing other things. So she's like, peace. I'm going. Finally, they find out that Magneto's plan is to kill the kid who's got the cure. So, big battle, San Francisco. You can't go to San Francisco without doing some crazy shit on the Golden Gate Bridge. Woo, woo, woo. Everything's going down. Big battle ensues. Things are fighting. People are going. Juggernaut versus Kitty Pryde. All this stuff is going down. But then Magneto, he gets shot with the business, and he's like, no, I'm not a mutant anymore. And then he goes, I made a mistake. This is all terrible, because the Phoenix is like, I'm going to kill everybody. And she almost kills everybody. But then Wolverine stops her, and he's like, I love you. And he kills her himself, and it's so sad, and it's so hard for him. But that's what happens. Everything's okay, I guess. It kind of was a little bleak. But then at the very end, Magneto's sitting there playing chess, and his hand moves up, and it moves. Did the cure not really permanently work? That's what it seems like. End credits, credits, credits. Credits, credits. What's this? Our first X-Men post-credit scene? Charles is actually alive. Moira McTaggart is there. What's going on? The end. Under 5 minutes. Did it. Bravo.
Bravo. Snaps for Jamie. Snaps for Jamie. 4:57, Aaron, with the timer. Impressive work. Impressive work. With so many details included. So little missed. It's almost like this movie could have been 5 minutes long. X3, X-Men, The Last Stand. We're going to do reactions first, then we're going to give you our 10 scores and like official reviews. So let's go around with reactions to this movie, sort of like as if the social media embargo just lifted. You just left the screening. You can't rank it. You can't rate it, but you got to say something about it in a tweet. Aaron, what do you think of X3, The Last Stand?
So that was interesting. I remember watching it. I'm not as almost a matter of fact, do not rewatch these movies very often. So it was kind of weird to see it, because I remember genuinely being kind of disappointed as like a preteen, and then coming back and being like, oh, okay. It's still fun, like, to see all the people. There are some decisions made. There are some things here where the weird decision-making quality of this franchise starts to rear its head in this one, and it comes back later. Come back later when mm-hmm. we review some of the other ones. It gets a little worse, and then better, and then a little worse, and then better. It's a little bit of a roller coaster ride. So it was interesting. I have questions about lakes, about fog, about the mid-2000s that I know we're going to get into.
Jenna, what do you think?
I felt crazy rewatching this for the first time in a very, very long time, because this is not as bad of a movie as the internet likes to think that it is. It is still not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination. It is still incredibly flawed. It makes a lot of very weird decisions, but I did not have an unpleasant time watching it, when it feels like the cultural consensus around this movie is that it is completely irredeemable. Mm-hmm. I think the cast is really fun. It is fun seeing this many people in this movie, just like, even if they're not all handled perfectly. And I think that there's a lot that it does well. It just has this reputation that is so different from what it actually is.
Jamie, what you thinking?
I have kind of a two mind of this movie, and it is the first movie that ever hurt me. And I actually pulled up this photo. This is me and my friends going to the midnight show when I was 16. There's me dressed as Rogue at the end there. We were like so into this. We had an X-Men party to get ready for this movie. And I'll never forget, like, you know, it's 2 a.m. We're walking out of the theater like, oh my God, what did they do to all my beloved characters? Like my two favorite characters in the movie has lost their powers, but there's not going to be another movie, is there? This is a trilogy, isn't it? And so it like was, it stung so bad. But I will say now, this movie works a little more for me because Days of Future Past exists, and we'll talk about that more. But the ending of Days of Future Past like fixes this movie in a way that like I can now just enjoy this as a movie. And I don't think it's a bad movie. I just think it's a movie filled with bad choices. Like, why did they make these choices? It's so depressing and weird. And so there are worse X-Men movies for sure.
Yes.
And there's a worse Dark Phoenix movie for sure. So ultimately it's like, it's grown on me a little, but I don't watch it as much as I watch the first two. I'll tell you that right now.
Mm-hmm. I really agree with Jenna the most of everything I just heard you guys say. And I think I haven't watched this movie in probably 15 years, and I watched it again last night. And I enjoyed myself watching the movie. That said, I think it's a fine at best movie, but it's not a good X-Men movie. Like, it is a terrible Phoenix Saga adaptation. What's that?
I have an argument about that. I will argue, and we'll get into this more with the Dark Phoenix actual movie. I will argue that neither of those movies really adapt the Phoenix Saga or the Dark Phoenix Saga. There are so many story components that are not present in either iteration of those movies. If anything, this is a better adaptation of like Joss Whedon's X-Men run that just happens to feature the Phoenix as opposed to a actual adaptation of the Phoenix Saga.
And it's interesting because Joss Whedon's X-Men run was in 2005 and this movie was 2006. So it's one of those things where it seemed like Marvel Comics started to maybe, you know, print books so they could set the stage for movies. But also, I think this is a movie that just ended up having too many cooks in the kitchen, which I think is something the MCU is running into lately. This is a Kevin Feige movie, by the way. When you watch those credits, he's an executive producer on it. And it seems like we were watching him sort of learn the lessons then. And then X-Men franchise put out some bangers after this. So he's not the only one. The Donners on these, there are other executive producers who stuck with the Fox X-Men movies when Feige went over to Marvel Studios. But I think Feige stayed in communication with everybody. There's been emails from him giving tips to Sony about Amazing Spider-Man and stuff that came out. But I think that when you look at the production of this film, it all kind of makes a lot of sense where they had... Originally, Bryan Singer was going to do X-Men 3. It was going to be a straight-up Dark Phoenix Saga story. Bryan Singer leaves. All the stuff about Bryan Singer comes out. They went in a different direction. They have Brett Ratner come in and do this movie before stuff about Brett Ratner, all that alleged stuff about Brett Ratner comes out. So when they clearly took what worked from the Singer version, and obviously, we can't not talk about, acknowledge the fact everything that happened with Bryan Singer, but he did make two very good X-Men. He directed both of the first two X-Men movies, right? Those were both him.
Yes.
And those movies were very cohesive, and you could see there's a person in charge of it and like a centerpiece kind of guiding it. And then when they changed directors and then added one story with another story from a new team, you can see how that affected this movie, the quality of this story, because there's more than one idea at play. They have the Phoenix Saga, and then they also have the like Charles and Magneto's beliefs on the mutant gene and what should be done about it. Like, both of which could have been good stories, but I think end up coming together to convolute the plot, and neither one actually gets a chance to excel. I found it to be an entertaining movie. I love these characters so much. I just didn't, like we said on the last one, it's going to be hard to imagine following up this X-Men saga because of how well done so much of it was. But also, there is a lot of stuff that it has room to be done better. So overall, I thought it was fine, but not good. Not as good as it should have been as an X-Men movie. Like, a fine movie, but when you look at it through the lens of X-Men and comics and all that stuff, a lot of misses. All right. Anybody else on the reaction front before we take a quick break, get into the deep dive? All right, we're going to take a quick 1 minute break. We're going to talk about we're going to break down some of the points in this movie, talk about some deleted scenes, talk about some facts you might not know about X3, The Last Stand. And then after that, we'll get into our 10 scores. This is a great opportunity to subscribe to the Phase Zero channel on YouTube, share our show with your friends, play it for your mom. And if your dog isn't listening, get the dog in the room, because that's plus one on the ears for the Phase Zero count. We count them. Pups count as two. So we'll see you in a moment. Welcome back to phase zero. We're in phase two of the X3 X-Men The Last Stand review, Road to Deadpool and Wolverine episode here. This is where we take a deep dive into the Easter eggs, the story points, and all that stuff. First of all, they killed Scott Summers right out of the gate, and I thought he was coming back when, like, I honestly forgot about that. So let's just start there. Cyclops was offed right out of the gate, off screen. What the hell? Wait, Jenna, you're muted.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Awesome. So I guess the rumor that has existed ever since this movie came out was that because he went and did Superman Returns, they wanted to kill him off immediately in this one, which is just wild, especially wow. Now that we're at a point where like so many actors are in both franchises and it doesn't really matter. Like the fact that they killed him off that quickly because of that is just kind of nuts.
I was also reading that him, Cyclops and Mystique were both supposed to have bigger roles, but because this got rushed into production, the actors are booked for other things and their schedules were not really allowing them freedom to work on this movie. So they just said, all right, forget it. You're out. Like, we'll smell you later. Tough.
It really like sets the tone. So I just Scott dying. And then you're like, my thing about Scott dying and then so many more people dying and so many people losing their powers is that this wasn't earned. Like we haven't reached an Infinity War Endgame level of these movies where it's like, it's time to F stuff up. It's like, no, we just had the second movie and it was amazing. And then they crumbled it all down so quickly. Like if you're going to do what they do in this movie, I just don't think they had earned the right to do those things.
I think so many of our takes about this are informed from being basically time travelers from the future. Like there is no multi-cinematic universe comprised of multiple companies making films at this point. Like if you had told somebody, like you always say, Jerry, they wanted to make that Spider-Man 4 and that crap didn't happen. And that was printing money at the time too. So it was probably like, well, grand opening, grand closing. Let's make this third one. And then what we'll figure out what to do afterwards. Although having the tag at the end would seem to indicate they thought they were going to make a fourth one, mm-hmm. It is a little bit weird because I haven't rewatched these. I really was shocked. Like, yo, they took him out in the first 35 minutes of this thing. Wow, yo, like this is strap in, Ari. This must be a wild ride. Yeah.
Also, the Professor X death scene shook me when I watched this for the first time. Oh. I was like hardly a kid. I was like late teenager, I think, when this came out, maybe 16, whatever. That had me shook when he blew up, when Professor X exploded. I was rattled by that.
It's like all like it's everything that happens is like, oh, that's pretty cool. It's a cool death scene. I'm just like, but I'm mad that it happened is the thing about it. Like, that's why I always say it's not a bad movie. It's just bad choices because the way it's not like bad to look at. It's not like this looks like crap, you know, like this, everything in the house, I think, looks really cool. It's just like, I hate that it's happening to my eyeballs.
I did find it funny that the one instruction Magneto gave was keep them out. And then Juggernaut just immediately throws Wolverine into the house. Like that's the first thing Juggernaut does. The part where Wolverine is using his claws to like crawl across the ceiling. Awesome sequence, but also reminds me of Logan when he's trying to get through Charles's like psionic like whatever that you'd call those waves when he's losing control of his powers. Remind me of that when he's trying to push through it. But Logan, we can't talk about, we haven't seen that movie yet. We're not there. What am I talking about? Did I just spoil something? Let's talk. Okay, Phoenix story. I like I said at the beginning of this, I think it was a bad version of a Phoenix story. And you know, X2 opened with a tease of the Phoenix Force being in the cosmos. They chose not to keep it cosmic, which I think speaks to the lack of bravery early 2000s comic movies had, which is in the costumes of these movies, you know, stuff like that. Nowadays, they'll go there, but who knows if I will get a third Phoenix movie. Feige likes to not repeat what's been done before, as demonstrated with the Spider-Man movies, but we'll see. But Jenna, I know you have more to say about this, so I'll let you yap instead of me.
I was going to say exactly that, though. I feel like the fact that they made it a split personality instead of this big cosmic thing, there's already so much happening in these movies and so much in this franchise that it is crazy that that is where they're a little bit restrained and they choose to make that decision. I don't necessarily like that component of it. And again, that's why I say this movie is not really an adaptation of the Phoenix Saga or the Dark Phoenix Saga, because purely beyond the space of it all, it's like Jean's relationship to the Phoenix Force is so important. And this movie does do that really well. I think they harness her anger really well, but making it a split personality is definitely a choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's so many of these movies from that time period where, like, okay, so like Inside Baseball, the last one was like the biggest Marvel movie ever at the time of like release. And then, so there was like a lot of pressure for this thing to be massive. And then along with the changes BD laid out, but the directors and stuff, like, so there is tons of studio pressure for this thing to be seven different things at the same time. And I believe that his too many cooks in the kitchen thing is pretty accurate. That's about the size of it. And I can imagine being in a room full of suits and being like, well, in the comics, her powers come from this weird interdimensional, like outer space. And they were like, we're not doing that. So,
also, why is it an hour and 45 minutes? Like, they earned the right to be like 220 at least.
I will say it is refreshing. Like, yes. Yeah, it's so refreshing to have a movie in this space that is under 2 hours. Like,
it's good.
It's so nice to it is so nice to rewatch it and just be like, oh, this isn't like a long time commitment. Ooh. But I do agree, they probably could have earned like a 2 hour, 15 minute runtime at this point.
And they have, there's quite a few deleted scenes for this movie. They filmed a lot of stuff they didn't put in. So they could have stretched it out a little bit, but, yeah, they didn't. A couple other things I have in here. The X-Men comics in the opening logo. This was the first time the Marvel logo was strictly X-Men comics. And included in that is the 2005 Joss Whedon comic. So I think that really just goes to show the sort of intention behind that. Speaking to what Aaron just about the too many cooks in the kitchen, I also think, like I referenced how the MCU is kind of feeling the negative effects this movie sort of felt at the same time, with not only too many cooks in the kitchen, but being rushed. Like, this movie was pushed into production really quickly. And I think that the Disney Plus of it all and three or four movies a year is something Marvel Studios films started to feel when they were pressured at the time to crank out a lot of content. And some of the MCU stuff hasn't been as good as it was when we were getting only two or three movies a year. Now we're getting three movies and four shows. I think it's just there's less sort of TLC being given to everything. And we see that with this movie years before, like 10, 15 years before the MCU started pushing out 20 hours of stuff a year. The de-aging effect, let's talk about that. Way before a lot of other things did it, I completely forgot that was a thing this movie did. And I was like, wait a second, they look so young in this scene. And then I realized, yo, they did it in 2006. It looked good. Magneto and Professor X walking, which lends itself right away to the fact that this is a de-aged thing, but kind of contradicts some storylines that are going to follow this. But it's the X-Men franchise's timelines are confusing. But the de-aging sequence when the two of them go to Jean Grey's house when she was a kid, I thought it worked really well. I think it holds up well today, too.
I think it looks better than some of the stuff you might see today.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, and which is wild. And I think it's because they're trying too hard now, I think, that it's like distracting. What a shame. Like, in a perfect world, wouldn't it be so cool if that was the debut of Fassbender and McAvoy? Like, if somehow, like, they, I know that timeline wouldn't work, but I wish somehow they had like reshot that scene and brought it in, and that would have been so cool. But it really doesn't look bad, which is interesting.
Careful, Disney Plus might update their version of the movie and shoot it with them.
I think there's also a weird element of there's not as much competition in the VFX houses to do that kind of stuff. There are seven different movies trying to de-age actors at the same time at any given release year now. And because there's such a demand and the speed concerns that you bring up, I don't think it's really that surprising in some ways. But, you know, I sat there and I'm like, is this... I'm like, I don't know. My eyes are old and bad now. You know, like, well, it looks great, but I don't know exactly why.
I thought it looked really good too. Beast looked really good, and he was practical.
That was wild. Chris and I rewatched this, and then we had like a 10-minute debate at lunch the next day over like this versus having the thing be CGI in the MCU. Cause it's like the physicality of it was just so crazy. Like, that is Kelsey Grammer, but it doesn't look like you just put a bunch of stuff on Kelsey Grammer. Like, it was so tactile in a way that was really fascinating.
I've said it many times, but I am pro practical all day. And I do think, like, and I just, I've listened, we know I've said it a million times on the show, but the Kelsey Grammer as Beast is one of the best things that's ever happened to me. Cause when you just like when you just kind of hear it, you're like, you put Kelsey Grammer in a Marvel movie, but oh, who else? He's just, it's really perfect casting. It's like, oh, even watching the animated series, it's like, that's a little Blue Frasier right there.
But it's okay. And it has never been confirmed, but there are some reports of things we've read since then that he hated being in the chair for this thing. He like hated how much time it was to be in the chair for like to make, to render this beautiful.
That's understandable.
Stuff. He's a man also. Like,
oh yeah, for sure. We're like, yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
I don't really hear actors ever come out and say, I loved being in the chair. I had so much fun sitting in the chair.
Except for Stellan Skarsgård. Yeah, Stellan Skarsgård said that like a couple days ago. So. Yeah. No, about pirates.
Yeah. No, that is an actor right there. I respect that so hard. Like, everyone showed up 5 minutes before the scene, but I sat in that chair for hours and hours. And I, you know what? I don't really know this movie as well. So I Googled the picture and I was like, dang, yeah.
Yeah.
He looks awesome.
I did the zombie on The Walking Dead once, and I got in the chair at 8 a.m. and I was in the chair till noon and then on set till midnight. And then it takes another hour to get it off. Like, I can't imagine, and that's just bizarre. Like, I got cut out of the episode. So, you have to look really closely and know where I am to see me. But that's like just to play, so essentially, well, they called it a hero walker, but it's essentially a background. Like, they have levels to it. There are people who don't get a full prosthetic, but that's like not even a main character. You know, imagine the detail that went into Beast. If it's 4 hours to make a zombie on The Walking Dead in season 8, they've been doing it forever. They have it down. Beast, who has to have all that detail 20 years ago. That's the respect to Kelsey Grammer for going through it, and everybody who goes through that whole prosthetic process. It's a lot. Hey, and Stellan Skarsgård, good for you, bro. I can't relate. neither can Kelsey Grammer or Dave Bautista or anything. Matthew Vaughn almost directed this. I guess I could have saved this for the end because I have like a whole facts breakdown. But Matthew Vaughn also directed this. But then he found out he said this at New York Comic Con recently. Halle Berry wanted Storm to be more of a hero. And there was a sequence where they had Storm in Africa bringing a thunderstorm to a area that needed water. And they said, we cooked a fake script so that Halle Berry would sign on. We're never going to film this. And Matthew Vaughn said he threw it in the bin, which is, you know, perfect British phrasing for trash.
Good for him.
Seriously.
Yeah, good for him.
That is messed up. How dare you do that to Oscar winner Halle Berry, too? Like, what the? Like, that makes me angry. That woman deserves some way more respect than that. And good for Matthew Vaughn. And you know what? Matthew Vaughn came back and said, ha ha, your movie notoriously sucked, but look what I'm going to bring to the table. So,
facts. I think this movie could. Well, I don't know if anybody could have made this movie better. I don't necessarily think it was Brett Ratner's fault that this movie wasn't, you know, a masterpiece, but Matthew Vaughn probably would have brought a bit of more style to it, I think. Cause he, you know, he's very specific and ambitious with his style, and he did First Class down the road, which we'll get to on our road to Deadpool Wolverine in a few weeks. But yeah, that was a trash move. And you got to wonder how often that kind of crap happens. Magneto, originally supposed to free the mutants in Alcatraz. There's supposed to be a whole bunch of mutants in Alcatraz. They ended up taking that out, only having the one kid in there who could essentially deactivate the mutant gene and became the sort of cure as humans saw it. But they had already started doing the VFX for the Golden Gate Bridge sequence. Like, the Golden Gate Bridge was supposed to be a bridge from Alcatraz to San Francisco so that the mutants could go just be free and maybe wreak havoc as Magneto may have wanted them to, or just been done whatever he wanted them to do. But they changed it. And they made it just so that he was going to go get the one kid, and that's where the fight ends up happening. So the Golden Gate Bridge sequence just ended up being like a thing they had already developed so thoroughly that it was nothing but eye candy in the movie. They didn't need a bridge, because I'm sure there were other ways Magneto could have gotten them all. They could have all just, I mean, he rode those tiny little iron plates in the last movie that were injected into a human's blood. Like, I'm sure he could have had less than the Golden Gate Bridge to get the mutants over to Alcatraz. But this was the most expensive movie ever, I think.
Yes,
certainly the most expensive X-Men movie at the time. $210 million.
Wow,
was the budget, and it ended up making money though. $456 million, I think, $460 million. But they were like, a whole bunch of that budget went to the VFX, which was largely that Golden Gate Bridge sequence, which had to be started early to get done and ended up changing quite a bit. So just an interesting thing about that. When he left Mystique behind, once she lost her powers, I thought that was savage. Savage.
I hate it. I hate that. Oh, like, especially as like as a 16-year-old, you have to understand Rogue and Mystique specifically were my life at this time. You know, I wasn't a big comics reader, but as I've talked about, X2 was just like my whole personality. And the fact that this movie ends with both of them, like it was just, I can't fully describe the feeling of like watching your two favorite women just be treated this way. But it's also like, but it is, putting that aside, like it is a pretty good scene because it just shows that Magneto is a villain. Because sometimes we forget because we're always kind of Team Magneto. And we're like, yeah. Oh yeah, he is kind of an asshole.
He's for the cause, straight up. He is dedicated to his villainous cause, which, and the thing is, like, much like I always say about Thanos, you understand Magneto's cause. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't agree with his means, what makes him so great is you fully understand. And like you said, you sometimes even rooting for him because we understand and we get it. You know what I mean? And that moment really just solidifies it. And then I think adds to the fact that later in the movie, Beast hits him with those same needle cure things where he thinks he loses his powers completely. So you see what he thinks of Raven when she loses her powers. What does he think of himself? Like, he probably loses all value to himself in that moment, just essentially because he thinks he's a human and he has for so long thought of humans as beneath himself and every other mutant. That's one part of the movie. I mean, devastating, but it worked for me. I thought it was incredible villain work in the writing in that part. What else we got here? Oh, we already covered a lot of this. Yeah. The end of the movie did look like they were going to make an X-Men 4. It looked like, yeah, they were going to continue this, right?
I have a theory about that. Like, it was either an X-Men 4 or if it was just, because I don't know how far along they were into developing all of the Origins spinoff movies, but maybe they wanted Charles to still be alive in some capacity to cameo in a lot of those movies. So it's like, let's just at least confirm that he's alive by the end of the movie, as opposed to like doing it later on.
So, like, was he going to be alive in a different body? Because there's a sequence earlier in the film where he's talking to Moira McTaggart, talking about transferring consciousness. Was that, I don't remember, maybe I just was looking away when they showed it, but was that, that was like a different body, right? That.
Yeah. I remember this being a whole thing at the time because it was kind of confusing. And that's why it's like she freaks out, because that's just like a person I assume in a coma that she's kind of hanging out with. Uh-huh. Doing her doctor business on, and then all of a sudden it's Charles's voice. So I definitely like Patrick Stewart's body disintegrated. That body's not there anymore.
As a kid, I thought they put the pieces back together. When I was a kid, I thought they found a way to put all the pieces back together because you heard his voice, and I was like, wait a second, how did they do that? That's pretty wild. But yeah. No, they transferred the consciousness, which is interesting because many years later, well, actually not that many years later, this was 2006, Avengers vs. X-Men was 2012. Mm-hmm. That comic concludes with Charles's brain being used and like essentially the powers being transferred in Red Skull and Uncanny Avengers that followed it. So this was an idea that ended up being used in comics too. It may have been used before it as well. I don't know. Jenna may know better than me. But I remember that a little over half a decade later, that was a kind of a theme in the comics with Xavier as well.
That man just dies and gets revived in so many ways. Like your point of like, oh, maybe they stitch him back together. It's like at this point, him becoming a Frankenstein is not out of the realm of possibility. Yeah. Like comics have definitely done weirder things.
Yeah. And so the movie ends. There's a deleted scene with lots of new students showing up at the school with, you know, Storm and Beast essentially running it. But that was already kind of teased in the sequence that did make the cut with Charles.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I missed something because I was admittedly cleaning my bathroom while watching this movie. when I watched it only like 2 years ago. But the kid who's the that they use for the thing, he ends up going to the school in the end. Mm-hmm. But how does that work? Do they have to isolate him, or did they explain like, because
surely they'll make a fourth X-Men movie and explain that.
But didn't I think wondered this, the like, same he's thing. Hugging Storm, and I'm like, what? Yep. What are they? What are they going to do?
Yeah. Okay. You watched the extended cut or something, because that's a deleted scene that didn't make the original version.
It was on Disney Plus, really.
At least I watched the deleted scenes on YouTube this morning, and I watched the movie last night, and I didn't remember that scene being in the movie, but I did see it in the deleted scenes montage I watched on YouTube.
It was in the movie for sure. But maybe, even still, I have questions about it.
Yeah, either way, for a moment, Storm could not summon tornadoes until that kid walked away. But yeah, I mean, that is a valid thing. I mean, that is something they'd have to figure out, but that's what the School for Gifted Youngsters is about, right? It's about helping them figure out their powers and how to do it and all that. And some characters like Rogue have a real hard time with it. That kid, I assume, would have a real hard time making friends at that school. But, you know, that's the thing, is help them figure it out. But yeah, so other facts I have about this. I already covered Mystique and Cyclops having bigger roles. Deleted scene had Logan at the bar from the first X-Men movie saying he's going home to the bartender. Same bartender was in it too. So they obviously had stuff they wanted to do to follow this stuff. They had ideas, or maybe not. Maybe this was just, that's how movies ended back in the early 2000s. It was like, we're just going to give you a little happy ending, you know, send them out to pasture and maybe never revisit it. Kelsey Grammer auditioned for this movie. It was the first audition he did in over 20 years because he really wanted to play Beast. Another scene that you mentioned earlier, Jamie, was on the deleted scene reel that I saw, and I don't remember seeing when I watched the movie last night, was the Bobby and Kitty Pryde ice skating scene.
No, the deleted scene, they kiss.
Yeah. Oh, they kiss, and Rogue is watching them kiss. Okay,
yeah, they don't kiss in this. I think they do that. So maybe
maybe I watched like extended scenes or something. Mm-hmm. But man, Rogue was ready to take all her powers away just for a man who was just trying to kiss anything that walked, bro.
I was going to joke about that, of like, that is such a teenage girl experience of like just wanting. I know she had so many other traumatic reasons for not wanting her powers anymore, but just like to have Bobby in the front of her mind while she's doing it. And it's like, especially considering other things that have been revealed about Bobby since these movies came out, it would be even funnier to throw it all away.
I thought the same thing.
The teen girl experience of throwing it all away, and then you have the boy in question end up being gay. It's kind of very hilarious. So I'm glad that the movies accidentally stumbled upon that.
I also, it's because X-Men animated series is so fresh for so many of us, like watching Rogue go through this in the animated series and then making a different choice too is like, but you, but also I guess in this she can't fly and like doesn't have super strength and didn't come in contact with Carol and all that business, but it's still like, it still hurts my heart that she makes this choice. It really makes me so sad. And but similarly on this subject, because Jen, I almost texted you watching this movie. I watched it the same day I watched the season 4 premiere of X-Men the Animated Series, all about Juggernaut. And they made some choices with Juggernaut in this that
he's not a mutant in comics.
No, that's what I thought. He's not a mutant. He's Charles's stepbrother.
Yes.
And that none of that was happening in this.
Yeah.
He was just a juggernaut.
I just love that line.
Yeah. I love that. I'm not going to lie. I love that line too.
The videos are core memory. They're a core memory, Brandon.
Yeah.
That sequence where he's chasing Kitty Pryde through the walls, that was good stuff. That's cinema.
That was cool. Yeah.
That's cinema.
I love when he knocks himself out. It's really funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that was well played by Kitty Pryde. One other deleted scene was Beast snapping a neck in the final fight. Just didn't make the cut. Just like really quickly, just snapped another mutant's neck, and they didn't put that in the movie. Maybe it was going to push it to an R rating or something. The Danger Room was supposed to be an X2. I remember reading that or seeing that when we were prepping for X2. And so now that we saw Danger Room open this movie, I thought, that's cool. That's a cool note. That's all my stuff. That's all I got to say for the deep dive part of the X3 discussion before we get to ratings. Anybody else got anything else they want to talk about?
I'm excited for the ratings. Go on.
Is there their only time we ever see Sentinels?
In the Danger Room?
Yeah.
In this incarnation, yes. Yeah, like beyond that, we do. But in these three, yes.
Okay. That's what I was asking. Like, well, that was random. Yeah. Just
seemed
one
like
time.
A mere reference. Like, here's an Easter egg for the fans.
Yeah.
But we're never actually going there until we do. All right, quick break. Then we're getting into phase 3 of the show, which is review scores out of 10 and the official phase 0 number score for X3, X-Men The Last Stand. See you in a moment. Subscribe during the break. It'll be great. We would love it if you do that. Thank you. Welcome back to phase 0. It's the final phase of our X3 X-Men The Last Stand review, which is time for a 10 score. Jamie, you're at the top of the screen. Kick us off.
Oh, goodness. I gave it a 3 on Letterboxd, so I guess that makes it a 6, and that feels kind of high, but then I thought about what I gave Madam Web, so I think I'm going to stick with my 6. I think I'm going to lock that one in.
Again, I scored Madam Web too high. Jenna, what you thinking?
I gave it a 2.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd, but that would even out to a 5, and a 5 almost feels a little too high. So I'm going to say like 4.4, probably.
Oh, you had this worse than Madam Web?
I think this is more flawed in terms of being an X-Men movie. This is more flawed in the ways that like Madam Web is flawed in being a Spider-Man movie. But I don't know.
Aaron.
I'm going to go ahead and try to help save us from the rage online. I shoot it a 6.5. I'll throw up a Hail Mary because I know Christina and them going to put this on the internet. while it is not perfect, it is fine. And the aesthetic choices are very, very strong. That plot, though, oh boy, we do a lot of stuff to ladies.
So you said 6.5?
Yes.
Okay, wow. 6.5.
Did you give yours?
I'm giving X-Men The Last Stand a 5.9 out of 10. I think it's a fine, okay movie to watch as an X-Men movie. It misses a lot of the marks. So overall, I can enjoy this movie this many years later, but it definitely could have and should have been better with either of the main stories being split up, even into two separate movies. But overall, that's where I'm at with it. So let's divide our score by 4. No way. Hold on. Wait. Hold on. I gave it a 5.9. Aaron gave it a 6.5. Mm-hmm. Jamie, what'd you give it?
6.
A 6. And Jenny, you gave it a 4 point what?
4.4.
Okay.
None of us are put on this earth to do math.
No, not at all.
All scores considered, Phase Zero official ranking score for X3 X-Men The Last Stand is a 5.7 out of 10.
That feels
actually
right.
Not that bad.
No, that's right. Yeah.
That seems pretty fair, honestly, for this movie. Seems pretty like a good place for this movie. We gave, I don't remember what last week's score is, but this is lower.
A lot higher. Yeah.
It was a 9.4 out of 10 for X2. Now we're at a 5.7. I have so many things in my mind. I got to run out of this room and go straight to a junket. So that's what everybody watching, leave your 10 score for X3, X-Men The Last Stand in the comment section. We'll see what the audience thinks of this one. We love our Phase Zero community and inviting you guys to participate. If you're listening in podcast form, feel free to tweet us, leave a comment on all of our Instagram posts, and just tell us what you think of X-Men, even if it's completely unrelated. We just love hearing from you guys. We appreciate it. Aaron, any last words for our X3 review show?
It's at Summer Lake Hornet. I want you to go on Instagram and go watch BD's hilarious trials from Arthur the King over this weekend. They brought me a lot of joy at the house.
Don't eat scorpions.
Don't eat scorpions. Don't.
Jamie?
Oh, goodness. A shout out to Richard in the comments for shouting out Letterboxd for me, because follow me on Letterboxd at Jamie Jurak, because I just upgraded to Patreon and I'm having so much fun with the posters. Go look at my MCU ranking, because I spent hours choosing the special posters for it. And I really trolled Quantumania hard with my Quantumania choice. My new catchphrase at the end, stop taking your phones out during the movies, please. Thank you. Bye.
Little PSA to end it. Jenna.
Yes. It's at Hey, it's Jenna Lynn on social media. As always, go read some comics. I'm also going to plug a book that I love dearly. It is called The Refrigerator Monologues. And if you found yourself annoyed at how Jean Grey is treated in these movies, there's an entire chapter basically tackling the Phoenix Saga with different named characters. And it is really, really good. And this entire book's worth reading. So,
and what's it called?
The Refrigerator Monologues. It's basically just a bunch of different girlfriends and love interests of superheroes just all meeting in the afterlife and talking about all the ways that they were mistreated. So
that's
highly
a great
recommend.
Title. That's
it's
really
so
good.
I highly recommend it.
All right, y'all. That's our show. Thank you so much for joining us for X3 X-Men The Last Stand review on the road to Deadpool Wolverine. Next week is X-Men Origins Wolverine. So we're on a roll with best, most beloved films. We're kind of, we're going to go like this with this saga. That's what it does. We're going to continue. We're doing all the Fox X-Men movies right up till Deadpool and Wolverine. X-Men 97 is right around the corner. So stay tuned, because it's be a big few months for X-Men, which means a big few months for Phase Zero. We appreciate you all listening to us. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube. Leave a 5-star review on all the podcast platforms. We appreciate you guys. It helps us keep the show going and growing. Play our show for your mom. Play it for your dog. Thank you so much for sending us pictures. When you play it on the big screen, it makes us feel cool. We'll see you on Wednesday for our regularly scheduled programming. See you there.